CliffCentral.com.
I am a South African. I carry the hopes and dreams of my country and the generations to come. I know that it's not where I come from, but where I'm going to that really matters.
At Sibanye, we believe the future of our country will be defined by our actions today, which is why we are committed to the development of our leaders. Sibanye, we are one. Visit us on sibanyegold.co.za.
Leadership Transformation Platform. I'm Adrian Groenewald. With me, Louis Groenewald. And we've got Richard Angus here today. And our special guest that we're going to focus on is Dawn Nathan-Jones, former CEO of Imperial Car Rental, and also then it became Europe Car. And she left them. I can't recall exactly when. We'll ask her. And she's now an entrepreneur. And the latest venture that you'll recognize is this Telkom-sponsored Mnet Shark Tank show. It seems to be an international franchise, like all these reality things these days. And she's with us. We want to explore her leadership career and what lessons she's learned and what she's up to. Dawn, welcome.
Thank you, Arjun, and thank you so much for having me on the show.
It's really good to have you with us. Your career. So you have, what, like 35 years at Imperial. Started when it was a small group of people. It became a big business. And tell us about that, and then Europe Car. What year did Europe Car take over, or there was some merger, and it changed names?
Okay, so let me start a little bit about my journey. So when I started Imperial, it was very small. I happened to meet Carol Scott. She was starting up a car rental business. At that stage, Imperial was very much a motor dealership. They had the Toyota franchise, and Toyota was sort of fast becoming one of the, this was in the mid-70s, really becoming quite a good brand.
When was Brandt Pretorius there? Brandt after that?
No, it was before. So it was in Bert Wessels. Okay. And so it was in that era. And so I met Carol, and she told me she was very passionate. She had left a competitor because she wasn't really going anywhere because she was a female, and females really couldn't be in senior management positions.
So those were the days.
Those were the days. But anyway, however, so I started, I was 21 years old, and I was given this great opportunity to start up the business in Durban with a number of people. But it was small. We had no customers. So really for me, my early days of being an entrepreneur was really survival, because if I didn't make this work, I didn't have a job. Carol said, "What every rental you bring in, I'll give you R1 for every single rental that you bring in." And sure. Everyone thought I was absolutely mad. Well, my salary, my basic salary was R250 a month. And R1. So in the first month, I doubled my salary. And the second month, I tripled my salary.
Wow.
And then she changed the goalpost.
Yes. She figured you were getting too good.
She figured out you knew what you were doing.
Exactly. So what was going through my mind at the time is, you know, how do I find customers? How do I grow this business? What do I need to do? So all the things that you learn at business school, because I didn't go on to study. I wanted to travel. And I was doing odd jobs to save money to go and travel, and happened to meet Carol, and didn't realize that I actually was an entrepreneur, and I had passion and drive and determination, perseverance, all that ingredients that goes into making an entrepreneur. And I was very blessed to have somebody like Carol mentoring me, and Bill Lynch, Maureen Jackson. We had a whole team of really incredible people. And I was totally empowered and grew the business, and then moved up to Johannesburg and took on various roles, and then took over from Carol in 1997. So that's almost 20 years ago. So and then really kept moving the business. And I think for me, the biggest challenge, if you talk about organizational leadership, is when you talk about the big companies like FNB, like Imperial, is you build a successful company. When you get to a certain level, how do you take that business and make it even more successful? Yeah. What do you need to do? Because it's easy to build a company from scratch. When I say it's easy, it's hard work, it's blood, sweat, and tears, it's sacrifices, it's all of those things. But how do you take that business really then to the next level? And I think that's where a lot of people really get stuck. But I was fortunate to have great support and learnt at a very early age. Although in the beginning I was very autocratic, I was very independent, I wanted to do things my way, I never listened to people, and you learn. You learn that those things actually don't work. And then I learned to surround myself with people that were far better than me. I had in my head I wanted to work until 55. Carol retired many years ago. And I really felt the need. I've always said, you know, you must love what you do and do what you love. And I've always loved what I've done, and I still did. I left at the end of last year. After giving it a lot of thought, I thought about it for a long time, and I had this milestone in my head that at 55 I needed to go on and do other things. I'd created many, many, many jobs. I'd created wealth for people and for our shareholders too. I hope you all have Imperial shares. And so I needed to go and give back and really take the cycle and go back to the beginning of my roots, which is being an entrepreneur. I didn't really want to start a business, but how can I encourage and mentor young SMEs, because I believe that's the future of the country, is yep. small businesses to create jobs, to improve the economy. And really, how do I get people and how do I move people and move their businesses? And leadership, Adrian, taught me a long time ago is about movement of people, movement of thinking, movement of ideas. And so when Shark Tank came up, you know, the last couple of months I've been involved in a couple of businesses. I've been a bit of an angel investor. I've looked particularly at young talent in rural areas, developing people in tourism, because tourism is an area that I think is going to create a huge amount of jobs for us and bring in a lot of foreign investment and foreigners into this country. And so through that process and through various organizations and associations that I was dealing with in discovering some young talent to work with, the producer or the CEO of Rapid Blue, the production company, Mnet's production company, Keeleen Irvin, she approached me and she phoned me one day and she said to me, you know, would you like to come for an audition to be on Shark Tank? And I'd seen the American version of Shark Tank, but I said, no, you're crazy. I'm not, you know, that's not for me. I've been in the limelight, and I'm not really comfortable about being in the limelight. I want to be sort of the backstage and helping young people. Anyway, she told me that I had a moral obligation to meet with her.
Somebody pulled the moral card on you.
Absolutely. Okay. And, you know, moral fibers, moral obligations. And anyway, we met. I gave her a name of a couple of women that I thought would be fantastic. In fact, I even went as far as arranging breakfast meetings with them.
Really trying to get out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I tried everything
to get
out of it.
I can hear you were trying really hard.
I did try very, very hard, but I've enjoyed it. I was a little uncomfortable at first, but it's been great. I've met the most incredible people. Mm-hmm. And I think, yes, it's about entertainment, but the entrepreneurs and some of the people, you need to watch the show on Mnet at 6 o'clock on a Sunday night.
Yeah, we'll talk.
To see the people.
We'll talk about the show a little bit in a moment. I still want to not run away from your career because there's so many lessons in there, Richard and Louis. If you just listen to, she very quickly just shared with us her career, a quick overview, but there's so many lessons in there. One or two or three that I just made notes as you were speaking was, it's amazing how timing, effort comes into play. So there was definitely timing in terms of when the business started, but then the effort had to come from you, a huge effort, and the empowerment word came up. You were empowered, you know, you were and incentivized, and a lot of entrepreneurial qualities there. But then over the years, you changed as a person, probably more autocratic and action oriented earlier on, but you became more consultative, I guess. Changed as a leader, evolved as a leader. You made wealth for many. And successful, but then wanted to give back, and that's kind of the phase you're in now. So those are some things that jumped out at me, but Louis, and then Richard, any lessons we pull from that quick overview?
I don't know. We can't get away. Every time we discuss somebody who's walked the coals of life, the truth is it takes courage. as well. And Dawn, the ability to handle opposition and resistance. We speak, as you know, of a law of resistance, that all movement is accompanied by resistance. Your feeling on how you've handled resistances and problems and a challenge along with everybody has them.
Okay, so let me give you a couple of examples, Louis, and I think that's a very good question, because yes, it took a lot of effort and it took a lot of courage. And there were many setbacks, many, many setbacks that we had. I remember in the early days in Durban, we were not given official status. We weren't official concessionaires because there was a tender process and you had to go through that process to be awarded a site at the airport. So we used to meet people. So in an early age, my first lesson is, how do you overcome an obstacle? The obstacle was that we didn't have a kiosk at the airport, and all of a sudden we were getting all of these customers that we needed to meet them. So we had a board and we used to meet them personally. So then we said, well, this is actually a benefit because we save you time. We meet you personally, we save you time, we take you to the airport. Anyway, we did that for a couple of months and we were really successful. We had this great campaign. We stand out in a crowd. We meet you more than halfway. We say we cut down on your travel time, et cetera, et cetera. But then came a thing called competition. Our competitors didn't like us. So what the competitors did is they went and reported us to the Department of Transport. In those days, it used to fall under, it wasn't ACCS, it was Department of Transport. And they got the airport police to actually arrest me several times at the airport. And, you know, it was strange, because in those days you went to the police station, you made a statement, and then you'd wait for the case to come up. But it was quite daunting, because I would go to the Umlazi police station, they got to know me there quite well, because we'd be arrested. And so what was the lesson? It actually made me more determined, because I thought I must be doing something right. Because if I wasn't, nobody would go this far to stop us trading. So that was a great lesson for me. And
so sometimes you think the opposition might mean that I'm not doing the right thing, or it could mean I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And it makes you more determined. Some people, they get floored by it and they stop moving in that direction, but others are more determined.
Well, the more everyone tried to hold us back, the more determined we became, and the more aggressive we became, and the more we said we're going to tackle this business and we're going to be the biggest car rental company in the country. And you know what? Maybe, and Louis, I'm sure you're going to ask, I mean, it was a lot of innocence and naivety. You know, if I think today what I know, would I do that? I don't know, because I know
now.
Would
you expect your staff to be arrested for you now, Dawn?
But it was fun. It was a lot of fun. We worked long hours, and nothing comes without hard work and effort.
The time and the situation required for you to do what you had to do. Richard, any lessons we pick up from?
So what I hear in the golden thread in terms of what you've talked about is a strong entrepreneurial thinking in terms of how to solve the problem, how to run that business. What do you think, or what was your what thoughts went through your mind as you came across these, let's call them the early challenges, as you were, you know, as the arrest happens and you say, okay, I mean, that's just brute force determination. I'm gonna do this. But I mean, the reality was you'd applied a lot of entrepreneurial thinking in terms of how you solved the problem. Did you ever have that, let's call it that moment of self-doubt that most entrepreneurs have, where they go, oh, I'm not so sure that was a bright idea. Did that ever enter the mind?
Richard, many, many, many times where you think, what am I doing? I've made a mistake. Should we be doing this? Should we be doing something else? Okay. And some of the maverick tactics that we used in those days, you'd probably be put in jail for today. But, you know, it was survival. We were so determined, and we were armed with with no MBAs, but we were armed with passion, sheer grit, determination, and we wanted to get on and make this a successful business.
So what helped you push through? Was it that passion and just that determination of saying, hey, okay, so this didn't work so nicely, but hey, let's just make this happen?
Absolutely. Self-determination, but also having some really good, and I think very often leaders or business people or managers are a little nervous to put their hand up and say, I'm sinking, I'm drowning. Go and find a good mentor. Put your hand up and say, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. And there are so many people that drown and they never come out of it. They just never survive. But I put my hand up many times.
Okay, so you put your hand up and learnt the principle of you put your hand up and ask somebody to help you out. And interestingly, I think most leaders, if you talk to them, they'll tell you about the time they put their hand up and they asked somebody for help. Most leaders will tell you they've done that. It's almost like the unwritten rule that leadership does that, and yet most people think they don't. It's like you don't ask for help if you're a leader.
Well, there's a mental block there. There's a mental block. There's a pride factor
arrogance.
There. Arrogance. Yeah, or arrogance. Or, you know, how can I, depending on the company culture again, if the culture is entrepreneurial, if the culture is conducive, then you could put your hand up. But, boy, you can put your hand up and look very pathetic or put your hand up and actually it comes across so assertive to say, listen, I know my job usually, but I don't know what's going on here. Please be my mentor. And in most cases, maybe 100% of cases, it'll work out well. Mm. Yeah. But some people have a mental block. They just won't put up their hand because they think they're supposed to know everything. But in stepping forward, you actually show humility and courage by saying, I need some help here.
And I'll tell you, Adrian, it really worked very well. And I'm not saying, please don't think that we milked it or I used it, but it really helped build a network because today, I mean, the Paul Harrises and all these people, I know them all because I went to their offices and tried to drum up business and try to, get them to use Imperial at that stage. And very often we would end up having a conversation on things that I found difficult to overcome. And it was amazing how helpful these people were. Mm. I mean, great, great people. I mean, I remember driving Anglo-American, what's his name? Oppenheimer. Thank you. Harry Oppenheimer. Thank you so much. He came to Durban, and I looked and I saw this reservation, Harry Oppenheimer. And I thought, I'm going to drive him. I'm going to drive him. And I remember Carol saying, but Dawn, have you driven a Merc C-Class or whatever? It was like really a fancy car in those days. And I said, no, I haven't. But, I mean, it had ABS brakes and all the rest. And I drove Harry Oppenheimer. I'll never forget he was going to the University of KZN, of Natal. And I drove him. And I actually used the opportunity. So I think an entrepreneur always looks for opportunities.
What would he say about that interaction? This nuisance woman who was just asking 100 questions before I got to my venue. How was that interaction?
I was very careful the way that I did it. Okay. I was very diplomatic. I didn't bombard him.
But it worked. You got something out of it.
I did. Well done. Absolutely, I did. And I met great people and always, you know, building a network with people that can help you. And really, what is learning? Learning is you learn through other people. Mm. Sure, you can read books, but you learn. And Louis's point, to your point earlier, Louis, about asking questions, challenging. I probably irritated a lot of people in my day of asking. I mean, don't ask the same question twice. Ask it once. Don't ask it twice. But I've asked many, many, many questions in my day.
All right, let's jump onto the Mnet Shark Tank. If anyone listening now have not watched it, I kind of like it. I have some questions about it, and the show is not about it. But this is an element of you giving back, right?
Yes.
Although there's an entertainment spin-off to it, and you kind of wonder, all right, in one show, several people went through it, but only one received an investor. But yet when you listen to those small entrepreneurs pitch their business, you go, oh, wow, I haven't thought of that. And the questions being asked and how badly they present and they ask for money and they haven't even told you about their turnover or where they're going. And then some of them present with such passion and you actually see the passion sometimes almost convincing the investors instead of the logic. Because in the end, you want to buy into a person.
Yes.
In the end, I like this guy. I like this woman. I can work with him or her. So I think there is a lot to learn, a lot of lessons to learn from the show. What have you taken out from it? And do you think it's achieving its objective? What is it trying to do from a positive point of view and not just for sponsors and making money? And is it trying to create awareness?
I think it's creating awareness and giving other budding or aspiring entrepreneurs an opportunity to almost look at themselves through the people on the show. And I've spoken to many, many, many people. And in fact, people who have worked for me many years ago who have said, I've watched the show and my goodness, I've got a great idea and I've got a business and I need a great investor. And I think the learnings, I mean, if you follow through social media, the people that have learned so much in the show through the questions that are being asked and through what they see, through the ones that are good and the ones that are bad. I must be honest, I don't think that there's ever a bad entrepreneur in terms of pitching on Shark Tank, because there's bad entrepreneurs, but the courage for that person to actually come into the tank and pitch in front of five very vicious, it can be quite scary. I think that in itself, you have to give it up to those people who put themselves out there. But then, I don't know if you saw the show last night. There was
haven't
a guy
yet.
That not. Okay. Well, I'll let you watch it. But you know, people that come in and ask for 48 million and value their business at 250 million, and they don't have a business. It's a one-man band, and they've never sold 1 cent. There's not 1 cent turnover. So I think there's a lot of naivety. I think that there's certain lessons for me. I think a lot of people, entrepreneurs, need to know and learn how to value their business. How do you value your business? And it's not about turnover, and it's, you know, and that's a huge lesson. A lot of people that come onto the show really don't know their numbers, and I think if you want to be an entrepreneur, you need to know your numbers. You need to know the difference, and we've seen it on the show that people, you say, well, what is your profit? And they say, my profit's 250,000. You say, is that your net profit or your gross profit? No, that's my profit. And then you say, well, what is your gross profit? No, well, that's it. So there's basic things that I think that we need to be teaching at school, at school level. That's what we need to be teaching people at school.
Practical entrepreneurial.
If I can just make the observation, so linking to that, and I'm glad you're at that point, the reality is that there is nowhere where people can learn to pitch their business unless it's in environments like this. You cannot sit or stand in an environment and say, here's a PowerPoint presentation on how to pitch your business to investors. In fact, there is nowhere in the world where people can learn this unless they watch something like this or they go through that experience themselves.
Okay.
And I think that learning process is so important. And unfortunately, watching somebody else, it's a little bit like idols. You know, you watch somebody else and you go, you should have known you didn't have a good voice.
Yeah, absolutely.
You should have known your numbers before you pitched. And if I'm going to pitch, I better make sure my numbers are right. And I might not be pitching the Shark Tank, but I might be pitching down the road at my local bank or my investors club or wherever it may be. The questions are going to be exactly the same.
Okay, so we're at the end. I kind of imagine that you do something offline with Romeo and Modernist and these guys and say, well, we actually have a place where once a month young entrepreneurs can come and pitch their businesses. This is not for TV. This is not for – because there's a huge need for that. So exactly what happens there, great, but make it more authentic offline. And there's probably a lot of it happening, but I'm not so sure that young entrepreneurs know exactly where to go.
So I think that we've seen the opportunity to create a platform, and the Five Sharks are talking about creating exactly that, a platform for people to be able to come and role play their pitches before they pitch. And not only that, we're looking at a whole lot of other things, which I can't give away now, but, you know, it's not really just about entertainment and the show. We really, really do want to make a difference and make people's dreams come true and help people grow successful businesses. I mean, my business, when I started, well, it wasn't my business, but at Imperial, I mean, our first month, our turnover was 400 rand was the first month's turnover. So, you know, it's possible. Anything is possible. And when I left, we were doing like 3 billion. So
difference.
Okay, Dawn. Final, well, just your message to leaders out there. Any message, and then I'll end off with a Sibanye executive leadership thought. That
my message, well, to entrepreneurs, to budding entrepreneurs first, is just don't ever give up. Because you need to persevere, and you need to fail a couple of times before you actually get it right. Mm. And my lesson to leaders is to learn to do things through people, mm. and to really encourage people to grow. And as I was given the opportunity and the support to grow, I think that leaders need to do that a lot more. I think so many people get so involved in the clutter and board meetings and board packs, and they really forget about growing the talent in the business.
Mm. Okay, Dawn Nathan-Jones, thank you so much for joining us. Wow, wonderful. And hopefully maybe we can meet some of the other sharks. And you know what we started doing with our business masterclass? We had SMEs come in and listen for the hour, like we have leaders listening. And we had them ask questions to the panel and pitch their business for 30 seconds. So again, and some of them, their pitches were really horrible and some were great. So we've learned a lot there, and we want to take that to another level as well. To end off with a Sibanye executive thought, as a society, and this is my thought, I think we are ignoring, even losing our ability to discern and choose authentic leaders, allowing unauthentic ones to flatter us instead. We must be careful. We must be careful that we are flattered by unauthentic leaders, especially in politics, but certainly in business, when in fact we need authentic leaders like never before. So always look for that as a leader. Next up, our business masterclass. We're going to talk about the theme, IT strategy for the growing business, issues to consider, with David Alexander. He's from IMI Mobile, founder and managing member of Blutron and Technologies, and he's a IT expert, and certainly for small businesses and growing businesses. So stay tuned. CliffCentral.com.